This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to. To remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Interesting time to be so thoroughly washed by the rain, and I'm very grateful to share this day and share Jikoji with the Kanindo Sangha. So thank you for opening up your practice to join with us very much. Thank you. This practice and this way can be condensed into basically one word, in my view, and that word is intimacy. This is a practice, a way, an investigation, coming to knowledge that is very, very, very close. It is very intimate. And that intimacy is what I'd like to explore together with you today. And in that context, to basically talk about what Sangha is. One of the founders of this practice thread, this practice path, his name is Dongshan Longji, or in Japanese, Tozan Ryokai. And when Dongshan was young, he practiced with a teacher named Nanxuan. And Nanxuan one day was offering a memorial service for his teacher. His teacher was Matsu. And they offered food and symbolically offered food to this teacher, to remember this teacher, Matsu, well-known, famous teacher. And Nanxuan turned to the assembly and he said, "So we have offered this food to Matsu. What do you think? Will he come? Will he come and receive this food?" And it was a large assembly and no one in the assembly spoke. And finally, Dongshan Longji, this young monk, came forward and said, "He will come if he has a companion. He will come if he has a companion." A very famous statement. Later, when Dongshan was practicing, at one time he was crossing a bridge and he looked down and he saw his reflection in the water. And he had an insight, an awakening. And he said, if I seek outside myself, it recedes from me. Though I am walking alone, I meet them everywhere. There is nothing that is not myself. Meeting this, merging with this, is merging with suchness. Our practice is this way is described variously as the three jewels, the three parts, or the three unifying parts, a very comprehensive way of describing the experience and the path itself. The three jewels are Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Buddha representing one's awakened experience, Dharma, our knowledge or understanding, and Sangha, our interconnection or involvement with all beings and all things. So we say, I take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I return to Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. I return to awakened, realized, completed life. I return to realized, awakened understanding. I return to realized, awakened interconnection and involvement with all beings and all things. This mudra that we take, this practice mudra, some people do this, most people do this. This is a traditional mudra practice. Sometimes this is described as I don't like this term, it sounds a little science fiction-y, cosmic mudra. It's over the top for me, but sometimes it's also described as a universal, the mudra of universality. Kobunchino Roshi described this mudra, and this traditional, as a, in Japanese, it's Hokai-jo-in. Hokai-jo-in. Ho means dharma. Kai is realm or sphere, area. And jo is samadhi, or one-pointed concentration, settling with, being with. And en means to confirm. So this Hokai Jo-in means to confirm with your practice mind, to confirm with your samadhi everything. The Dharma Dhatu, the Dharma, the realm of all dharmas, the realm of all phenomena, all things, all beings. With this mudra, you can try it sometimes to put your hands together and try and feel coming from the center of your body, from your core, that from this core you confirm all of life, all existence. In other words, even though we're doing individual practice, we are not practicing alone. When we take this mudra, When we take this form of practice, we practice with all beings and for all beings. The right hand, the hand that's holding the other hand, it represents, in the symbology of this mudra, represents the Buddha realm, and the left hand represents the human realm. So the Buddha realm is holding, supporting the human realm. And together with the thumbs touching, they make a circle. They make a unified circle. And even the symbology goes even further. So the two thumbs represent Buddha and Buddha realm and human realm, and then the various fingers represent Buddhas, Bodhisattvas. Wait a minute, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Shravakas, Pratika Buddhas. The Asura realm, human realm, the realm of the, I'm sorry, that's the Deva realm, the Asura realm, the realm of the warring gods, and then there's the animal realm and the realm of the hungry ghost. The hungry ghosts, those who are never satisfied. And the hell realm. So in other words, like symbolically putting your hands together like this says everyone is here. You invite everyone here. Sometimes when I remember that and I put my hands together in this mudra, I kind of feel like this mudra is kind of like a funnel, like a funnel that is from this core, from the core of the center of my being, is going out and being with everything. And concurrently, I also feel like all things, all beings are kind of coming in and being my core, myself. And I have to say that really helps my posture when I do that. I sit up a little straighter. I feel a little more responsible. Anyway, you can try that. When you take this mudra, you can try and get a feeling for that. That big embrace that big embrace of Sangha, that big embrace of the assembly of all beings, the assembly of all life, all patterns of existence coming and being with you when you practice. So we could say that taking this mudra is practicing with Sangha, is being Sangha. Now on a more practical level, I mean on a more immediate level, Sangha is hard work. Sangha is not easy. Sharing practice life with other people is challenging, and even being in a primary relationship, some of you can acknowledge, is challenging. Being part of a family is challenging. All these ways that we come to meet one another and relate to one another, besides having this large idealistic view, It's called Daishu, the great assembly of all beings. Besides having that wonderful, inclusive view, there's the practical and day-to-day work of being in relationship. It's not easy, because sometimes the people that come together, that come to practice together, are not necessarily, I guess you'd say, you don't necessarily have chosen them, or they have chosen you to be your friends. We've come together for this this specific, this important work together, but we don't necessarily have chosen these people to be with. And yet here we are, a family, practicing together. I remember when I was in Tassajara, we used to joke that, it was kind of a joke. It was actually, there was a lot of truth in it. We used to joke that, oh, I can take refuge in the Buddha. I can take refuge in the Sangha, no problem. I can take refuge in the Dharma, but taking refuge in the Sangha, oh, I don't know. In a monastery situation, even like a lay practice situation like this, some people are very come to the practice with very sincere aspirations, and other people come, oh, it may be for other reasons, just to hide, or to shop, or to carry their baggage from one place where it got a little stale into another place. There's all kinds of scenarios for how a sangha comes together, and so being together is sometimes takes work. Nonetheless, as a sangha, we make what's called a Buddha field, a place of practice together. Recently, not so recently, two or three years ago, this sangha here had quite some difficulty, and we had two people that were very experienced in practice that came from outside sanghas, from the San Francisco Zen Center sangha, that had trouble relating to one another, and a lot of the sangha was polarized around this, around this issue. It created a tense time for Jikoji, and I myself tried to kind of hold a middle place, and to be not to be accepting of all these various conditions, and not reject anyone or side with anyone. And so, of course, I got criticized by both sides. You can understand that. Other sanghas have gone through these waves of difficulties. My feeling now, some people have stayed on after that, and a few people have left our residential sangha, which is, in a sense, is appropriate that they should develop their own practice elsewhere. But even though things are calmer now, I still feel a sadness. I still miss them and want to embrace everyone. However, I don't know, stupid and Pollyannish it is, I feel that the inspiration from my teacher was absolutely inclusive. And I wanted to have everyone with me, like holding this mudra. Anyway, what I'm feeling now about Sangha these days is that besides having this broad and idealistic and inclusive view of Sangha, my feeling is that Sangha is fundamentally of a place, that it is local, that it is, as I said in the beginning, it is an intimate, it is a very intimate affair. In other words, although we practice individually, we're on our individual cushions, Buddha's seat, and we all take this Buddha's seat and sit down together and work independently on this radical self-acceptance of ourselves, which actually is the first step in being part of Sangha. We're with basically who we're with. We're with who is in proximity to us. We're with who shows up. We're with who shows up. We're with, it's wonderful to think your Sangha is the whole world, but on a practical level, your Sangha is who's close to you, who's the closest to you, who you can touch and who can touch you, who can meet you. In my room, I have a Tibetan scroll. They're called tankas, and I'm sure everybody's aware of what a tanka is. And mine is a tanka of Shakyamuni Buddha. A friend of mine in Chicago, who makes assemblage art, she found this wonderful tanka in a garage sale, an estate sale in some house in Chicago. Anyway, it's a wonderful tanka. And the tanka shows the Buddha with his hand down like this. And this is called the earth touching mudra. And this represents a time when the Buddha was vacillating, you could say, was struggling with what to do, because he recognized that he still had desires to go back to his own life of luxury and ease, and then he still had desires he still had many desires. Even though he intended to put these away, they came forward. I call them the daughters of Mara, these desires. Anyway, he struggled to maintain his resolve, his intention in practice. And at that point, he touched the earth. And he said to Mara, he said to temptation, to desire, he said to doubt, he said, I'm here. I am here. I'm of this place. I exist here. And after that, his practice opened up, and he established the strength to continue to practice and achieve his awakening. So that's what I am feeling these days about Sangha. Sangha is located. Sangha is here. Sangha is sitting down and standing up. It's walking. It's meeting your friend. Sangha is washing your dishes. Sangha is being in connection with what you touch, with the person you meet. Sangha is location. Sangha is being located, being of a place, of a time, being present. I'm sorry. I got carried away there. Anyway, that's my feeling about Sangha. And to those who are not able to practice with me, to practice in this location, I happen to be at Jikoji at the moment. I wish you all well. But for those of you that are here, my spiritual friends, my spiritual compañeros, my companions in the way, thank you for being with me. Does anyone like to say anything or add to the comments? Yes.
Yeah, in the Theravada text that I've read, there's an emphasis on having a noble companion.
Hmm. Spiritual friend.
Yes, spiritual friend. Huh. And I guess that kind of ties back to the answer that was given. About the person being, the memory of the teacher being present. So the answer was, they'll be present with a friend, which, you know, it ties all together.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it is part of Theravada, that noble companion. Maybe you could talk about the noble companion versus concept versus Sangha.
Good question. Dogen has a, in his Shobogenzo, one of the fascicles, one of the essays he wrote, is called Yuibutsu Yobutsu. It translates as only a Buddha with a Buddha. It's kind of like saying it takes one to know one. Only a Buddha can recognize a Buddha. Only a Buddha can confirm a Buddha. Only a Buddha and a Buddha together can chew up the Dharma, can thoroughly eat the Dharma and be satisfied. Only a Buddha can confirm the Buddha is in the sense that only a Buddha can recognize a Buddha. I look at you, you look at me, Buddha meets Buddha. So Dogen, how did it Dogen say? I might have it here. Simultaneously we practice with Buddha as Buddha. Same thing. So I would say in a kind of idealistic sense that Sangha is Buddhas meeting Buddhas. You know? Which sounds kind of grand, doesn't it? Because nobody really thinks of themselves as a Buddha, but essentially, who else? Who else but us? You think of yourself as a Buddha? Do you have a question?
At times, but I also have a question. Huh. Is now a good time?
Sure, yeah.
Do you think it's possible that everyone has a ability to be a Buddha, but it's like when you find someone who like resonates with you on a certain level, you bring it out in each other? Or is it like only certain people?
Interesting. Like there's a capacity in some people to recognize the capacity in others, but it's not universal. It's kind of like if you're tuned to that other person, you can recognize the Buddha nature in that other person. Is that what you're saying? Something like that?
Yeah. Do you think it's wise to try to see if you're in tune with everyone, or just like let things happen?
Who are you not in tune with?
Not sure yet.
Then you're fine. You're in tune with everyone. Maybe we can start with the assumption that we're, or even the not just the assumption, but the certainty, the faith, the trust that we are. Unavoidably connected and involved with everyone. There is actually no separation between ourselves and others. That's just a convenience that arose from evolutionary wise from our survival instincts. But fundamentally, we can't escape our involvement with everyone. And not only that, there's nothing that's hidden. There's nothing that's secret. Everything is available to us. And we even though we know that, we conspire with one another to ignore this interconnection. In other words, we conspire with one another to accept their version of, or their myth of separation, but it's not so. It's not so. And proceeding from that place, we can find a companion. We can find someone who someone who resonates with us. Who, what did you say? In tune, is in tune with us. By the way, that word in tune is the root of shramana. Shramana is the someone who willfully chooses to step back from the busyness of life. In the Buddhist time, they became ascetics and things like that, and they were described as people who were trying to be in tune, and not just in tune with an idea or philosophy, but in tune with everything. And but they pushed it, the early shramana. Yeah.
Yeah. You use the word confirming quite a bit. I'm not very familiar with this word. It's like, doesn't it come from Christianity? Talk about confirmation.
Confirmation.
Are you using it in a different way? I'm not sure how you use it.
To confirm, I don't remember the context. I used it.
You said something like, the Buddha confirms another Buddha. That context would be you said recognizing. You used it other ways too.
You could say acknowledges or sees, really sees, meets, yeah,
yes. Or intimacy,
yeah. To confirm. How are we doing? Any other? Yes.
I'm just kind of curious, came to my mind now. Of one thing for many years is that we sing at the end of the chant, we sing all relay, nations. This made an impact years ago because we don't do that in any other part of it. So I sense that it is the basis, it is a kernel of what the practice is with people.
Yeah.
And the intimacy seems to me has a, people do just horrendous things to other people. Murderous.
I've noticed that too.
In realms of seemingly intimacy, and it almost seems in many ways that there's a chance of intimacy actually deepening when the, as Pema says, when the edges are sharp and you lean into the these betrayal and you have many words that describe this hostility between us that is inherent. So it seems an opportunity of this intimacy to truly deepen is when it's really difficult. Like Canon Do and Jikuji.
Yeah, now there's intimacy for you. Yeah. The people know the history with Canon Do and Jikuji. So, Canon Do originally started out as a temple with Koban Chino Roshi, and Koban gave it to Les Kay some time ago. So we're basically like, it's a family thing going on here. So that's why it's really great to have you here. Really, it's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. We have to kind of fight to do it, actually. there's some resistance.
I can imagine, yeah, yeah.
Separated at birth.
Mm-hmm. What?
Separated at birth.
It's true that being close, living together, having a primary relationship, having a familial relationship, that's where the real work is, and that's where, if pain is to be felt, that's where the pain is the sharpest. And I think, as you said, if you're ready to receive it, if you're ready to be taught, if you're pliable and ready to receive your experience as teaching, since that's the closest and the most intimate, that can be your best teacher when you experience those things and realize who is feeling pain? Who feels the hurt? Why is there separation? Is there basic goodness here that has been wounded? You know, other things like that come up when you are able to be taught.
So when you talk about intimacy, being in tune, intimacy being in tune, or relationships, is it something that's meant to say, obviously, if you take all of us here, we are all different, we each have our own individuality, and being in tune is also, is it a part of saying being able to let go?
Sometimes I drive on Interstate 280, and it's a beautiful road. I think it's one of the most beautiful roads to drive on, the hills that go up and the beautiful hills and everything. And going into the city when the driving is good, you're in tune with the other cars, usually. You know, unless there's some crazy guy going really fast, everybody's in tune to one another, and they're hopefully in their lane, and they're in relationship to one another. That is kind of an example of being in tune. We're all in our individual vehicles. We're all in our and. We can say that our individual vehicles have a whole bunch of, there's a whole bunch of stuff in our cars, you know? We didn't clean out the back seat. There's a lot of baggage in there. There's a lot of karma. But nonetheless, this pile of individuality, this vehicle, at that time, on that highway, can be in tune with all the other cars, and they can be moving in one direction, up and down the hills. And you can feel that, yes, I am alone. I am totally alone. I am totally independent. I am free of you all. I am my own vehicle. And simultaneously, yes, I am in tune with everything. I am dependent on the road. I am dependent on the gasoline. I'm dependent on both of those things together. So to answer your question, I would say both of those things work together. And accepting that kind of paradox of, not paradox, but that interesting convergence of our individuality our autonomy and our freedom with our total involvement and interdependence with all things is both of those coming together is our truth, our way. We're kind of like a river. We're all in this flowing experience together. And as I said before, I'm feeling very important, how very important it is to stay local, to keep this an intimate affair. We practice together, we eat together, we share our lives together in this particular way. It is of a place, of a time. And remembering that, we can relax and enjoy the intimacy of our shared existence. And that should be enough. That should be enough. Is that enough? Okay. Attention may extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.